Well, howdy, everybody. This is old Paul Bunyan here. Hey, thanks for your interest in my old stomping grounds, the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway. Yep, they named it after me, and I'm pretty dang proud of that. You know, Babe and I helped open up this land in the old logging days, and we think it's a pretty special place, with plenty of tall tales, legends, and lore to explore. Why, we've got stories about giant beavers and loop-de-loop railroads and, well, more great stories than you can shake an axe handle at. And they all come to life on the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway. But I've been known to get pretty long-winded, so I'm going to let some of my friends share a story or two. We'll talk again soon. Here are two of my favorite gals, Eddie Johnson and Irene Myers. And oh, have they seen times change around here. Ladies, tell the folks about the old resortin' days.
All along the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway are resorts which offer rest and recreation. Now, this is not a new idea. There have been resorts for, I'd say, 80 years, wouldn't you, Irene?
Oh, easily.
We're going to look at some of the early resorts in this area. Irene, I think you worked in an American Plan resort when you were just a teenager, didn't you?
Yes, I did. It was Kamberling's Resort, and they'd been there in the early 20s. My work was in the kitchen. There weren't any automatic dishwashers in those days, so my boss told me to use plenty of soap. They said we don't want any dysentery, so I obeyed orders. We had the fishing guides come in, and we had their kits ready to go because they would take the guests out fishing, and they'd have shore dinners, and so we had to pack the kits for them so that they could fry the fish. We had bread, and we had to have grease for the frying, and cornmeal and flour mixture, and beans.
Canned, I suppose.
Oh, sure.
You don't ever want to forget the can opener.
Oh.
Who were some of the guides at that time?
Oh, there were Lee Heath, Alfred Johnson, Carl Johnson. They would take these people out. In the early days, they said they had a launch, and they'd tow all the boats out to the fishing spots.
Something you don't know that I know about that. Carl Johnson, at that time, whenever he had a shore dinner, would hire his 10-year-old nephew, Raleigh Johnson, to take his boat, which had a 1.5-horsepower motor, and take the women out to the big island where they would have their shore dinner.
Really?
Yeah. Of course, little did they know that decades later, that island would be dedicated as the Raleigh Johnson Natural and Recreational Area. Well, now, you were in an American Plan. That's when they feed the people, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, right. They had cabins for each family, and then the help, of course, had cabins, too. It was kind of interesting. One day, my boss came in and said, would I like to be a waitress? So then I became a waitress.
Oh, wow. And we were promoted. Well, my experience was in a ma and pa resort with housekeeping cabins. Those cabins were not too exclusive years ago. In the 40s was a terrible time to be in the resort business. World War II.
Oh, yes.
There was gas rationing. You couldn't get tires. They weren't making any new cars. So when you had a resort in the 40s, you weren't making much money. And, of course, they weren't charging much money either. I can recall my first experience with the housekeeping cabins. They were renting for $15, $25, and $35 a week.
Oh, really?
That included the boat and a half-day free guide service. Can you imagine? But then the cabins weren't too great either because they all had ice boxes. And our men would put up ice every winter. And every resort had an ice house because they had all of their ice boxes that they had to take care of. They were pretty primitive in those days, but for $15 a week, you know, what can you expect? One thing I remember, maybe it's a holdover from gas rationing, when people would come up with their families, they'd park that car and they'd get out and they probably wouldn't go anyplace until time to go home. And did the kids have fun? I even made a list of all the games they used to play, and you didn't have to hire an adult to organize them. They had their own fun. They played Red Rover, Statue Maker, Simon Says, Tag. They also went turtle hunting, and they organized their own scavenger hunts. And then we had great big inner tubes from the big mining equipment up in northern Minnesota. And they'd jump on those. They had more fun with those. And then they'd play volleyball, and the older ones would teach the little ones how to play volleyball. All those kids learned to swim up there. They didn't have any Red Cross swimming lessons, but
no, I don't
the
imagine.
Older ones taught them how. And this was at the time when people were just learning to water ski, and it's adults, too. In the afternoons, the women and all the kids would go down by the beach and have more fun laughing at the people trying to water ski or watching the little ones, you know, in the water maybe for the first time. And the men went fishing, just like over at Camberling.
Camberling's had been there in the 20s. It was 1938 that I worked there.
Oh.
And then later they sold to Fuller's.
Fuller's.
And then it went to Lee Gels, which is now Driftwood.
Resorts at that time were certainly big on fishing. We had two guides from our resort. And did they bring in fish? Big strings of walleyes and northerns. Now it's catch and release. And resorts are still fun, but it's very different now. Kids have to be organized, it seems. People want to know if there's a TV in the cabin. And they're putting in dishwashers. It wasn't like over at Camberley's where you scrubbed everything by hand.
That's right.
I don't know if those were the good old days or not, but
Well, you were speaking of what your cabins rented out for.
Yeah.
My wages were $5 a week plus board and room. So at the end of 3 months, I was really rich.
Well, money was different in those days.
You
could send the kids with a nickel to get an ice cream cone.
Uh-huh.
You can't do that anymore. Lots of things have changed. And the boats. In those days, very few people owned boats. The cabin had a boat that came with it, and they were just tickled to have that. I don't think any of the Ma and Pa resorts even offer a boat anymore because people come with their own boats with 75 horsepower, 125 horsepower. Of course, things change naturally.
Ah, fishing. I love to fish. Did you ever hear the one about me and Ike the Pike? Now that's a good one. You can read all about it on one of the tall tale panels along the route, and it is a doozy. You know, it wasn't always so peaceable and friendly like it is around here now. Sometimes it got pretty darn rough and rowdy, even downright dangerous. Here's my buddy John Watrosky. He's got some real-life stories about some of the, well, shadier characters from the old days.
The area encompassed by the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway was once a northern frontier, complete with bootleggers, speakeasies, fistfights, and gamblers. The towns located on the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway are steeped in excitement, danger, and intrigue. Stories of rough-and-ready lumberjacks, gangsters, and unsolved murders are part and parcel of their collective histories. One of the great unsolved mystery murders that occurred was that of Pine River's founder, George Barclay. George was a Civil War vet, and after the war between the states, he headed north to find his fortune. He'd heard about a new railroad that was being built in the North Country to ferry out the huge abundance of saw logs being cut in this part of Minnesota. In 1873, George decided to build a trading post called Barclay's Ranch alongside the rails that were being laid to the north. Barclay first built Barclay's Trading Post, an assembly of log buildings and livestock holding pens. He traded goods with both the white and Indian people who traveled through the Pine River area and became quite wealthy for a time. The story goes that George was sort of a rebel-rouser, and he invested his money on building not only his trading post, but also a large two-story hotel restaurant that sat alongside the railroad tracks. Some called it Barclay's White Elephant, but George was determined to make money, and for a time the hotel flourished. The late 1800s were wild and woolly around Pine River. Men looking for work and not finding it hung around Barclay's Hotel, where it was not uncommon for fistfights and shootings to take place any time. George Barclay wanted to have the Cass County seat moved to Pine River, but was rebuffed by lumber barons in the northern part of the county, where they had named Walker as county seat. Barclay made several unsuccessful efforts to have the county seat moved to Pine River. On October 29, 1898, George Barclay was shot and killed while sitting inside the restaurant of his own Barclay Hotel. Two men were indicted for the murder, but one was never brought to trial and the other was acquitted. The murder remains unsolved to this day. Theories abound as to why anyone would do away with Pine River's founder. Some say it was because his effort to get the county seat moved. Some say George's wife may have had a hand in the murder. To date, the case is still open at the Minnesota Crime Bureau. Many of the communities along the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway experienced similar wild, wild frontier episodes during their development. Chicago gangsters frequented the area, and a number of bank holdups occurred during the 1920s and 1930s. Well-known crime figures could be seen sipping drinks at Captain Billy Fawcett's Breezy Point Resort or at Manhattan Beach. Many of the resorts of that time report having underworld figures as guests, Some of the gangsters even were said to have shot ducks with submachine guns. It was not uncommon to have bullet holes in the walls of resort cabins during that time. Bootleggers left jars of illegal moonshine sitting at the base of trees along lonely country roads. One local roadway still carries the name Old Whiskey Road, leading one to believe that someone once used it as a drop-off point. As you travel the roadways of the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway, imagine meeting George Barclay's murderers heading for the woods, or meeting a large black limousine with dark figures clutching machine guns in the back seat, or finding a quart of moonshine sitting at the base of a large white pine tree. All of this happened right here where you are now. It's part and parcel of the lore and legacy of the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway.
Yes, sirree, Bob, Old Whiskey Road. I remember those days. And then some of them are a little fuzzy, if you know what I mean. Now I want to introduce you to my friend Ray Nelson. He's been reading up on some of the earliest explorers that first made their way up into this beautiful wild country. Some even before Babe and I got here. Ray, you want to share that with all the folks?
Glimpses of our past from our early travelers. History must be interpreted not through race or natural movements, not through entire groups of people, but through the separate characters of individuals. It is because of those characters that there is history. And each place one stops in today's road, there exist layers of time. Lake Dakotas, Anishinaabe, early French explorers, black robed missionaries, fur traders like Jean-Baptiste Perrault and George Monk, American military explorers, Zebulon Pike, scientific explorer Joseph Nicolet, hundreds of loggers, and even early Corps of Engineers surveyors came to this area. Quotations from Edward G. Neal's Upper Mississippi in 1881. Between the head of Superior and the Mississippi River, above the falls of St. Anthony, is a region of many lakes. So numerous are they, and interlaced by clear and murmuring brooks to one in a balloon, they would appear like a necklace of diamonds on silver filaments, gracefully thrown upon the bosom of earth. Surrounded by forests of pine, birch, and maple, the marshes luxuriant with wild rice, the shores once frequented by the fox, the bear, and the beaver. It has a region adapted for a secure and happy home for a tribe of North American Indians. Nicholas Perrault, who built a fort as early as 1683, has left an interesting description of the lake region. He wrote, "Speaking of the Sioux, it is to be remarked that the country where they are living is nothing but lakes and marshes, filled with wild rice, separated the one from the other by little tongues of land, which at the most, from one lake to the other, are but 30 to 40 steps. Thus the Sioux are inaccessible in that marshy country, and cannot be destroyed there but by enemies having canoes. For in these places there are only 5 or 6 families together, which form a hamlet, and all the others are in the same way, at a certain distance, in order to be ready to help each other at the first alarm." Another description is Zebulon Pike describes on February 22nd in 1806. "Arrived at Whitefish Lake, my party crossed this lake and encamped between two lakes. This may be called the source of the Pine River." Another description of the area was by George Monk in 1807. "Beaver formerly abounded here, but is now very scarce and dangerous to hunt. Being in the neighborhood of the Sioux, the implacable enemy of the Ojibwe, deer abound on the frontiers. Wild rice grows spontaneously. The natives gather a small part. In April and May, pike, carp, whitefish, rockfish abound in the lakes. On the south side of the lake, the Northwest Company has a fort and garden. The company has introduced horses and pigs into the quarter. While the men hunt beaver in the spring, the women make maple sugar." Later description of the area is from the journals of Joseph N. Nicolet, 1836. "We set out at the circular lake called Kawawigamag, the round lake of the Chippewa, today called Upper Hay Lake. It is a cheerful and charming lake where one may be at peace and rest, or meditate and study, or dream and love. In the surroundings of Paris or London, the hills embracing it would sell for about 100,000 francs per 50 square feet. This pleasing little lake is fed by a river flowing in from the northwest, called by the natives Manitosibi Oyasun, or Hay Creek. We had traveled only some 100 yards when a path of flowers and a garden of greenery opened before us. The surface of the water was completely sealed by the large, round leaves of white water lilies crowned with their striking flowers. the size and brilliance of which vie with those of the grandiflor magnolia. A curtain of green trees bordering the left bank projected its jagged shadows across the wide ribbon of green and white. Everyone seemed affected by this pretty landscape. Shigabay, our Indian guide, was afraid of damaging the flowers. He would hold his paddle up, and the other paddlers would do the same, at the mercy of the current, would glide lightly over the bed of greenness, leaving unharmed the yellow-hearted white corallas. I was so hypnotized myself by the scene that I forgot I had a compass before me and that I was supposed to chart the direction.
Those explorer fellows painted a pretty picture, didn't they? Just imagine the thrill of laying your eyes on such a pristine place for the very first time. And you still can. That's what the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway is all about. To help folks like you find those unspoiled places we're still lucky enough to have around here. You know, once word got out that this would be a fine place to live, folks started coming in droves. Oh, it was a hard life at first, but those early pioneers thought it was worth it. Here are Bob Bungard, Betty Ryan, and Steve Rudek to tell you about some of those hardy souls.
Denny Gustafson, known for years, lived here and lived in the community forever. Born here and raised here before Billy Fawcett came into town.
So he told you about some old pioneers. I mean, we're talking about real pioneers here.
He did. He talked about Sigra Brenno as one individual. Sigra homesteaded property in the city of Breezy Point, right where Antler's restaurant is today. He homesteaded 160 acres. His brother, Fingar Brenno, homesteaded another 160 acres right next door. According to an old Platte book, Fingar raised Holstein cattle and was born in Norway in 1876 and then settled in what is now Breezy Point in 1909. Interesting enough, Denny went on to tell a story about Sigra honing out a railroad tie. And Betty, you know that story.
Well, what always made me so amazed was that he would hone out this railroad tie, walk all the way to Pequot Lakes, and the railroad would pay him 10 cents for that railroad tie.
When you're talking about honing out a railroad tie,
it has to have four flat sides.
Yeah, probably doing that with what, knives? Big blades?
I think there was a draw blade that they used then. A railroad tie is, what, 10 feet long? And then he put it on his shoulder and walked to Pequot, which had to be at least 6 miles way the roads went those days.
Sigra would grade the road between Breezy Point and the Lake Hubert Railway Station and then come by horse and buggy to Breezy Point. And he did that with a team of horses.
The people who live on Lincoln Point, they would come by train and the farmers would meet them with wagons usually because they had a lot of stuff that they brought on that train. They had to have everything that they were going to have. They had their tents. They had all that. The farmers would bring them up to Pelican Lake. They stayed the whole summer.
The story is also told about Sigra when he homesteaded the acreage where Antlers now sits. They had to first build a barn for the cattle that first winter. Sigra and his family then lived in a hole in the ground to survive the cold, cruel winter.
It's a good place to be when it's cold out.
Yes.
The first earth shelter that there ever was that one.
Also, another thing, the main road at that time going into Pequot was what is now the Bushman Road. The County Road 11 was not even here at that time.
Oh, and then there's a story about Clark Gable, and there's a room in the Fawcett house where he's supposed to have come and stayed.
Talk about stories. How about the stories of the revenuers?
That's one of my favorites. And you know about the sheriff.
Well, yeah, I talked to an old sheriff once who pretty much confirmed that this did happen. During those days when gambling was illegal and alcohol was illegal and the revenuers would come up from Minneapolis and the revenuers at that time could not effect arrests, they would have to rely on the local sheriff to accompany them and make any arrests. When the revenuers would get to Little Falls, they'd ring up the sheriff in Crow Wing County. The sheriff then would call up to Breezy Point and let them know that revenuers were on their way, and they'd get rid of the slot machines and all the illegal things that they had there.
Can you imagine they hauled it all down in the basement? What about the tunnel? There's supposed to be a tunnel underneath the Fawcett house.
I heard that there was tunnels going between some of the buildings, the old supper club, and I understand that there is a partial tunnel still existing today underneath the Fawcett house.
There's also a story that there's buried silver that was hidden in a wall that's in Breezy there someplace too.
If the walls could talk, I'm sure there would be a lot to tell.
There could be some really interesting stories about people who came here, too.
Seems like the moral of the story is tourism first.
Yeah, tourism first, right.
Build a barn for the cows and move the family into a hole in the ground. Babe thought that was a great idea. Those were some tough folks. And how about those wild doons at the Fawcett House? They had their own hole in the ground, but it was for hiding the evidence. Did you know that one of the best ways to see the wild side of the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway for yourself is on the biking and hiking trails? Here's John Hankey to fill you in.
The mighty Paul Bunyan may have been too big to ride a bike, but he made sure to create plenty of opportunities for the rest of us small folk with the swing of his mighty axe. Did you know that Paul Bunyan built trails? You betcha he did, and he did it with ease. Paul would cut the trees, and Babe would be utilized to haul the trees out of the great north woods. After his work was done, everyone noticed what great trails they were. In fact, visitors to the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway can take advantage of many different trail opportunities found along the route. Paul's greatest feat was to create one of the longest paved bike trails in North America. Heck, they even named it after him. The Paul Bunyan Trail provides year-round entertainment to lake's visitors. Now you've heard the lore, so let's hear the real truth about the trail development inside the corridors of the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway. Development in and around the byway has been on a steady increase since the early 90s. A lot of the people that call this area home have relocated from areas of the state that have included amenities that are essential to the wellness of communities. One of those amenities are hiking and biking trails. Trails along the byway promote health and wellness in the community and also offer a taste of northern Minnesota with its beautiful trees and lakes. Trails at one time were overlooked. In fact, they were seen as another way to have public funding go down the drain. Trails today are looked at as a necessity in a lot of the developments in the area. Homeowners used to think that a trail in front of a property would bring down their real estate value. Today, the reality is that trails actually increase home value. As our population continues to age, physical fitness becomes more important. It is also important to not forget about the youth of our communities. The Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway has been a champion for promoting trails in the lakes area. The development of paved shoulders along the 54 miles of the byway and elsewhere has provided ideas for lots of communities to get more use out of the current roadway resources. While trails do cost money to create and maintain, the investment is worth its weight in the return of local tourist revenue and also promoting the health benefits to local citizens. Communities see the development of trails as the number one request in local comprehensive plans. A community can create extraordinary resources if they get together for a common cause. The Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway got its start as a way to improve biking and safety along a county road. The idea spurred many more ideas that eventually created a national designated scenic byway for locals and tourists alike to explore. Volunteers, commitment, and networking are keys to successful trail development. Examples of this can-do attitude are plentiful along the route of the byway. So grab a bike or take a hike, come explore the lore, and enjoy the trails and tales that make the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway a must-see attraction in Minnesota's great northern woods.
Yep, they named the Paul Bunyan Trail after me, too. Shucks, if a fellow wasn't careful, he might get a big head. Well, yeah, I guess it is pretty big, but then so is the rest of me. Hey, it's my claim to fame after all. Now I want you to meet another old friend of mine. Bill Haubein has a funny story about some cows that kind of got out of hand one day. Babe was in on that little escapade himself. Tell him about it, Bill.
The story I'm about to tell took place somewhere around 1912 when the Slocum family moved into the area. They moved into a farm that is now the corner of County Road 112 and County Road 16. Their name was Slocum, and that's what the corner was named for many, many years. And Doc Slocum was a self-taught veterinarian. And he had a young boy whose name was Max. In later years, Max used to come into my shop and have me do work, and he'd always tell some of the stories of things that happened years ago. And one of the stories was when he was quite young, one of the neighbors that lived a mile down the road, the wife came into the yard and she says, "Where's your dad? There's something terribly wrong with our cows. He's got to come and look at them." So Doc Slocum and young Max went home with her, and the cows were in the yard and they were acting funny, and old Doc Slocum kind of laughed and he says, "Well, there's nothing too serious that's wrong with them. They'll be all right in the morning. They might be a little grouchy." But he said, "They got into some sour mash somewhere," and he said, "They're all drunk." they left Mrs. Hands there with her inebriated cows, and I guess everything was all right the next day. But somebody had set up a still, which was kind of northwest of their farm, and it was on an island that sat in the middle of a bog between the mainland and Hay Lake Creek. And they had dug the still into the side of the bank, and that's where they had their operation. When we were kids, we used to go out to that island, and you could still see some of the remnants of the still where it had been. And then the story about the Indian family. We moved up here in 1947 on County Road 16, which is about halfway between 371 and 112. But at that time, it wasn't County 16, it was 371. We got up one morning and looked out across the road, and there was something funny hanging on the fence. We could see activity. There was people moving around. So I went out a little closer to the road, and here there was birch bark baskets hanging all along the fence. There was some Indian people busy getting things set up. They put up a frame and a shelter like a sunshade. Then a little while later, there was some poles went up, and by noon they had a teepee set up. It was an old couple who had come up from Mille Lacs. Their kids had brought them up, and the neighbor had given them permission to use that for the summer. And they lived there, and they made birch bark baskets and hung them on the fence and sold them to people going by on 371. They had a grandson that stayed with them quite a bit. He was about my age. We used to have a lot of fun playing cowboys and Indians together.
Bill, I remember that old basket stand teepee myself. It was right where the Gateway Gazebo is today. Those were some good times, huh? Nice people, too. Nowadays, there's all kinds of fun places to go and shop for up north souvenirs and eat and play and relax. You know, there's plenty to do and see up around these parts. Something for everyone, any time of year. And I have just the gal who can put it all into a nutshell for you. Lynn Scherenbrock is kind of the ramrod for the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway, and she's been working mighty hard to get the word out to all you folks. Lynn, they're all yours.
The Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway is a recreational route, looping around two chains of lakes and several individual lakes. Visitors come here to explore the lore, as they say. In just 54 miles, the recreational heart of the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway comes alive in so many ways. The 14 interpretive panel kiosks is one fun way to learn both the truth and lore about each of the sites on which the kiosks are located. One story tells of the continuing allure of great fishing in this area through Paul's epic battle with an enormous fish whose name is still debated today. Was it Notorious Nate or Ike the Pike? At another panel location, the story slips in a little logging history through a character named Timothy Burr, or Tim Burr for short. Let me take you on a little trip along the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway. We'll start on the northwest tip of the byway at a charming town called Pine River. Pine River likes to refer to itself as still a real town. On any summer Friday at 1 p.m., you'd see duck races and swimming going on at the same site where logs floated down the river in the 1800s. And in case you're wondering, those racing ducks, not real birds. But there are real birds nearby. Beyond town, birders, keep your binoculars close as you pass through some of the best wildlife watching areas around. An historic canoe route actually runs side by side with the byway at several locations along this part of the route. While you're watching for your favorite bird, you better also keep your eye out for rocks. No, not falling rocks on the road, luckily, but digging can be an adventure. Evidence of the glaciers is clear in the boulder fields and the stream beds. One of the Paul Bunyan tall tales tells of a marble game Paul played with these big boulders. Traveling southwest along County Road 15, folks have the opportunity to explore some of the earliest resorts of the area. One of these still caters to the winter recreational pursuit of dark house spearfishing. Heading back northeast, you'll hook up again with County Road 1 and continuing east to its intersection at County Road 66, which we call our own little central Minnesota Route 66. South along 66, There's a breathtaking panoramic view of Trout Lake, one of the 14 lakes of the Whitefish Chain. In fact, it's such an outstanding view that well-known local artist Tom Otteson did an oil painting of this spot. Right about now, you can almost be assured of hearing something from your passengers or even yourself like, "Oh my goodness, the lakes, they are so beautiful." Here, the road slips between picturesque Ox Lake on one side and Loon and Island Lakes of the Whitefish Chain on the other side. Lakes really are the focus of a great percentage of this area's recreational activity year-round. Coming up to the west is County Road 16. This part of the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway is referred to as the spine of the route because it runs right down the middle of the byway. Along this part of the byway are many of our area resorts. Minnesota resorts have been purveyors of recreational enjoyment to the people of our own state, the nation, and even occasionally internationally for years. Some folks might be curious about resorts. Well, stop at any one and ask them. One thing about resorters, they love to talk. Maybe you're the kind who likes to get out of the car and get into the woods a bit. Along County Road 16 are two wonderful walking trails. Upgard Wildlife Area is, in fact, a DNR project where the ideas from Carol Henderson's book, Landscaping for Wildlife, are actually put into practice. About 5 more miles west on County Road 16 will bring you to the Veterans Walking Trail at Island Lake Woods. There's an interpretive panel here that clues you into a connection between a huge 1958 forest fire at this site and the DNR's fire tower on County Road 11. The 500-foot boardwalk across a shrub swamp and the 4 informational panels along it are worth a quick snapshot in and of themselves. A couple more miles west and you're at the County Road 16 Highway 371 intersection where you can take a break at the byway's Gateway Gazebo. If the day and time is right, you might be able to watch a lumberjack show just a short walk away. 2 miles south on 371 at County Road 11 is one of 4 sites where the Paul Bunyan Trail meets the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway. It's a bicyclist's dream place. On the northwest corner is Paul Bunyan's Bobber Water Tower and his big chair. Then, only about a mile east of Pequot Lakes is the historic fire tower. It's actually listed as an historic lookout. Back in the late 1980s, the police chief's pet bear got loose and climbed up this tower. The only way they could coax it down was with its favorite treat, marshmallows. If you're at least as hardy as a black bear, you might want to climb the top yourself. The view is stunning. County Road 11 also boasts 3 golf courses around Breezy Point and the pastoral Pelican Woods Cemetery walking path, plus the Breezy Point City Park and the Chirilla Hiking Trail. For those interested in history and fishing, take a turn north onto County Road 3. At the Pelican Brook Bridge, walk to the water's edge and take a look at that rushing water. This is perfect breeding grounds for the Champagne of Minnesota minnows, the horny head chub, also known to you fishermen as the red-tailed chub. In 1941, Minnesota's first minnow seining permit was issued for this site. Good bait, good fishing, it's still important today. Where County Road 3 turns into County Road 66 in Cross Lake is the Cross Lake Historic Log Village, where local historic figures and stories come to life during various festivals throughout the year. One of the most popular is the Candlelight and Cider Tour held every September. On the west side is the Cross Lake Dam Recreation and Campground area. The progression of this area to the recreational playground of today is told in panels and artifacts. Then you can head north on 66 through Cross Lake. As you pass by Cross Lake itself, you will have covered all 54 miles of the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway, but there are still so many places, events, and stories just waiting for your next visit. Come back again soon to explore the lore of the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway even more.
I got a horny head chub, I'm gonna catch a bigger fish than you're gonna, bub. Gotta love the fishing, and we've got some of the best in the country. It's just another great reason to spend some time up here in the lake country. I sure hope you're having a good time, and I hope you visit as many places as you can along the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway. It's a fun way for the whole family to explore this incredible land of legends, lakes, and lore. Hey, I want to thank all the people who contributed to these podcasts, and I also want to tip my hat to our sponsors, the Paul Bunyan Scenic Byway Association, KLKS Radio in Breezy Point, and the Brainerd Lakes Chamber. And a special thanks to Douglas Wood. Well, thanks for listening, and I hope we can talk again soon. We'll spin some more tall tales and have a good old time. So long.